It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions. Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Thursday? We do. From the Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Studios in San Diego, we welcome you to our Thursday podcast, Hacksaw's Headlines. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton in studio, along with my co-host, the inventor of this podcast, John Riley. We welcome you as we head towards a great sports weekend. And a week from now, we head to the National Football League Draft. Our Thursday podcast is brought to you by North County Center of Poway and Escondido. We will all need help with our eyes when that time comes. I want you to remember the name North County Eye Center. And by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores in San Diego to serve you. You've got projects. These are the people you should deal with for materials, for ideas, maybe even as your consultant. John Riley, good afternoon. Boy, we've got a ton of topics on the table. There's so many stories that are breaking. Before we do, just remind everybody that will be joining us on our live stream, because we do this for the fans through good and bad, thick and thin, healthy or not. We do this for the fans, and we invite the fans at the end to join us in Fans Forum.
Fans Forum. Yeah, it's your chance to get involved. You've got a question or comment in the world of sports that you think you can maybe stump Hacksaw, or you've got a question. Just type it in the live chat on Facebook, X, or YouTube, and we'll get you involved in Fans Forum at the conclusion of Hacksaw's Headlines.
And if you like sports, please check my website. I write a ton on it every day. Check it every morning. It's LeeHacksawHamilton.com. We want you to join our insiders group. Right on the front of my homepage is a big orange box. Fill it out. You'll get on our email list. Want you to subscribe to the podcast every time we put something up on our YouTube channel. Bingo, you're going to get a flash alert too. John, we got a lot to cover. Where do you want to start?
Well, first of all, are you doing okay, Lee? I know you're coming in a little hobbled.
Okay, a lot of people don't know this, okay? We do play hurt.
Yeah,
right? John and I have done this in the midst of COVID, where we're in an outbreak in our studio, so we had to wear masks. We looked like the Lone Ranger and Tonto. Some of us are playing hurt. I had eye surgery yesterday. You ought to see the other guy that was in the fight. So anyhow, that's why I'm wearing my glasses. I don't want to scare anybody. We'll see what I look like come Saturday morning on KUSI, whether I show up with a black eye or not. But yeah. We are playing hurt, but we're doing this because we want to serve all of our followers. John, pick a topic.
Okay, let's talk about the Padres. So they just went to Milwaukee. They won 2 out of 3, but that last game is still killing me.
This is a pretty good streak they're on. I could have never imagined they'd be on this streak. They've won 5 of their last 7. They come home. They get Toronto, which is staggering. So the Padres have a chance here to make a run towards first place. It's hard to believe, John, the Padres are 1 game behind the Dodgers.
Right on.
The Dodgers are not playing any type of great baseball either. So that's amazing. So what surprises you most? That the Padres are playing home run derby? That they've gotten this many bombs from Machado, Tatis, Kim, or Profar this early? Or is it the evaluation of the pitching staff and what Dylan Cease and Michael King have become? They are both bulldogs in terms of their competitiveness on the mound. They've been pretty doggone impressive. In fact, I would say Cease and King are the reason these guys have won 5 of their last 7. Bit of a setback. Yu Darvish has what appears to be a neck strain. He's on the disabled list. Joe Musgrove gives you good outing, a tough outing. He's still trying to seek his rhythm. I think one of the important things for Mike Schilt going forward, he's got to find a right formula for the usage of the bullpen so we don't get into a situation where they're way overused. And I'm concerned about Robert Suarez. They keep going out and giving him the ball and asking him to go more than an inning. Go out there and get me the 4 or 5 outs you need to get the save. I mean, he is such a hard thrower. How many bullets does he have in his gun that he can use any one time? So I'm worried about this extra inning usage of Robert Suarez. But I'm pleased where they are, a little bit surprised at what I've seen first 3 weeks of the season. And John Riley says,
"Yeah, well, it's pleasant. You know, they're above 500. That's good. It's early. I think to me the biggest surprise, number one, is Jackson Merrill. I mean, the guy has just been so terrific, and everyone is praising the guy. I don't need to pile on, but that he's been wonderful." Profar, you know, has been incredible. So it's like the guys that are on the bottom half of the order seem to be the ones that are producing. That's a surprise. Dylan Cease kind of comes as advertised. We kind of knew Musgrove and Darvish weren't going to be perfect coming out of the gate. King pretty much as advertised, pretty solid starter. I mean, yesterday's game was, he was fantastic, had a no hitter going into the seventh. And then the bullpen, you know, I think it's kind of firming up. You know, I think it's going to be okay. I mean, you know, even like some of the guy, even like the Rule 5 guy, Kolek, is showing us something. So just keep hitting. You know, they had a hitting drought yesterday. Hopefully the hitting comes back against Toronto.
I do like the bulldog that I see, though, in Cease and Michael King. Even though Michael King gave up 4 home runs in that prior start, to see him come back, John, and just dominate and just be on the mound, give me the ball and get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with the persona of Cease and Michael King, and they really need those guys.
Yeah, they do. They've been terrific. And Waldron is the number 5 starter. I think he's starting on Friday night. And he showed us something, too. So, you know, good on the Padres. Let's keep this momentum going.
Okay, we go from that. Let's talk about Padres off the field. There are new developments here.
Yeah, okay. This is the Bally Sports thing. Are they getting some money now, right?
Well, here's the issue. Bally Sports obviously defaulted on the contract right before opening day last year. MLB took over the Padre deal. MLB guaranteed the Padres they would get 80% of their TV rights. They got about $40 million last season. However, as part of the deal, the Padres evidently were ready to go to bankruptcy court and file a lawsuit saying that these guys, Bally, defaulted on this contract. But these guys then somehow came up with the money to be able to keep the contracts of other teams for an additional year. That's not fair to us. They defaulted on us and put us out in the street and somehow came up with the dollars for the Rangers and the Astros and the Braves, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there was a lawsuit. Padres filed asking $162 million in damages for the way Diamond Sports and Bally were conducting the business as this thing was going into bankruptcy. They evidently went to an arbitrator. They have settled upon a price. The Padres are going to get a $10 million penalty payment from Bally. There will be another $68 million that will be paid when they go into bankruptcy, restructure, and shutter Bally Sports San Diego. So the Padres are going to get a total of $78 million, but it's not all deliverable immediately, and we don't know when the bigger payment, the balloon payment, is going to come. They will dissolve Bally Sports San Diego and all of its assets. I guess what's really incensed the Padre people is somehow Diamond in the middle of bankruptcy comes up with equity to be able to keep the Rangers and to keep the Braves, and they screwed all these other teams along the way. The one that's still out there, the next one's going to file because of what the Padres are getting, is going to be Arizona, because Arizona was the second one that disappeared from the Bally roster. There could be some litigation there. By the time we're going to get to the end of this coming season, there will have been 14 teams that Major League Baseball probably is going to take back, even though Diamond Sports, which oversees Bally, is trying to restructure. It's very complicated. At the end of the day, the Padres are still taking a significant financial hit to the budget. But I guess the thing that's really bothered everybody is, why were the Padres treated so poorly as compared to all these other teams that Bally Diamond was scrambling to try to keep the rights for another year? That's why this litigation is still going on in bankruptcy court.
Yeah, it was weird because they were... The Padres were sort of one-off, right? Like MLB was managing it and Bally was still doing the other teams.
Well, they were the first one that went down. Then suddenly Bally came up with the money to keep the others going. How's that possible?
Yeah, and especially if they're going bankrupt. I mean, how are they coming up with the cash? I guess they're pulling it from their parent company, Diamond Sports, to be able to pay out. So this is good on the Padres. Cosenza has got to be really excited about this. A big lump sum of money coming in, kind of help appease the other shareholders. But, you know, good on the Padres. Because when that Bally deal broke up, I mean, that was a punch in the nose.
That's a big amount of money not to have, and they had spent that money down road with the contracts that A.J. Preller had let out. Again, that money they're getting from Diamond and Bally, that's not payable tomorrow. That might be 6 months from now, might be a year from now. They're still coming up short in terms of their actual media money coming in the front door.
So defer payments like Otani's contract, maybe.
Yeah, without interest.
But I will say this, though. Since the Padres went to the new broadcast system, I miss the pregame, postgame in studio that they had with Pomeranz and Sweeney. You know, now it just feels very disjointed, like the few maybe 10 minutes before the game starts.
Yeah, it's been streamlined radically. It's been streamlined because of economics. I think it's hurt the content. But, you know, there's ways to do things differently. You know, if you're paying Pomerantz, and I had this as another topic another day, but we'll just touch it quickly. If you're paying Pomerantz, let him do third, sixth, and eighth inning scoreboard updates. He's at the stadium, he's in the studio. There's no reason you cannot do an insertion in between innings, scoreboard updates, third, sixth, and eighth innings. Mm-hmm. Give the fans more than just Orsillo and Mudd talking baseball, laughing, and hijinks. Let's get some more content in there. You got Scanlon. Use him more often. You're paying these people. Let's make it maybe it's going to be a different broadcast, but make it a more depth content broadcast. That's one man's opinion.
Well, did you watch the broadcast where they had the umpire in the booth?
Yeah, and that was fun. That's a one-time, one-off thing.
Yeah, as a one-off thing, I think it was fine. But even like, you know, the young lady that is now the host. I mean, I don't know. Why did they switch out Annie Heilbrun and brought in this? She used to be with the Yankees, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't get it. I mean, the way they're shuffling these things around, because it wasn't broke. It was working before, you know?
I am all about content. That's why we have 11 topics today, right?
Yes, right.
I'm all about content on the Pottery Broadcast. It's more than balls and strikes and Donnie O and Mudd talking. You're paying all these other people. Create some content. Let's do more for me.
Well, you should roll into the booth yourself with all your content. You should be doing the scoreboard updates.
If I were king. All right, let's go. We got two other baseball topics we want to get to this first half segment.
Okay, Trevor Bauer back in the news. Let's break it down.
This story just keeps going and going and going. He doesn't have a contract. He's pitching in Mexico right now, trying to get a major league contract. Now there's more issues. Woman in Scottsdale, Arizona, had a one-night stand with Trevor Bauer in 2020. She says she got pregnant. He says she demanded $3.6 million in damages. She said she had an abortion, then she changed it. She said she had a miscarriage. Bauer's lawyers say there's no medical records of a rape kit, pregnancy, or a miscarriage treatment program. Bauer's filed suit against her for defamation and extortion. Yesterday, she was indicted in Scottsdale. Charges of extortion, fraud, and harassment. Bauer makes bad decision. Look at the fallout from this woman in Scottsdale. Bad decision. Look what happened with the woman in San Diego on the rough sex case. All this guy's past is just kind of still haunting him.
Well, this is vindication for him, right? I mean, he was saying that the women that were going after him were malicious. They were gold diggers. And this is all proven to be true. I mean, did you see the video of Trevor Bauer when he explained it all?
Yeah.
It was like a 5-minute video. He's sitting on the edge of his bed, like a half made bed in a hotel room, which was a bad look. But he broke it down and he explained. He goes, look, man, you know, I have, you know, intercourse with other women, but I'm not made out to be the bad guy that I am. And he just felt like he needed to come out and say, look, it's not me, it's her. And I think he's right.
For the second time.
Yeah.
But so, nobody's going to touch him.
But you could, now he needs to come back. Bring him back. I mean, he's innocent, right?
Innocent of being stupid?
Well, there's, if you want to say you can't play ball if you're stupid, I mean, we can make a giant list for that. Bauer needs to come back to baseball.
At this point, nobody's going to hire him, even though everybody's losing pitching. We'll see where the story goes, but that woman is in big trouble now for what she tried to do to Trevor Bauer. Last baseball story of the day, and boy, it's been a tough week. It has really been a hard week.
Yeah, I mean, we lost a lot of big names here, guys that I remember.
The White Rat, Whitey Herzog, has passed on at age 92. Oisk, Carl Erskine, legendary Brooklyn Dodger, and Kenny H., Kenny Holtzman, hell of a frontline starting pitcher, all have passed on. Let's talk about Whitey Herzog. Unique, different guy. I guess the word I'd use to describe his managerial style and his philosophy is unorthodox, his game plan. He went into St. Louis where they had been down. He looked at Busch Stadium and said, we can't win in this stadium with that roster. He built the Runnin' Redbirds to fit the dimension of Busch Stadium. Base stealers, base single base hitters, frontline pitching, bullpen by committee. And the end result, he won 3 National League pennants, got to the World Series, he won a World Series ring. He was responsible for the Ozzie Smith trade for the Padres, the acquisitions of Lonnie Smith, Willie McGee. If you close your eyes, you see those guys running the bases at Busch Stadium.
No, big time.
That was Whitey Herzog right. baseball. And, of course, he got a World Series ring. He went to the Royals. He got them to the American League Championship Series twice because they ran dead on into Steinbrenner's Yankees and didn't get to the Fall Classic. A lot of people don't know he was a front office executive with the New York Mets. When the Mets were developing pitchers by the name of Ryan, Matlack, Kuzman, and Gentry, he was the guy that was scouting him and getting
really?
Those guys signed.
Wow.
He was a hell of a baseball guy. Very different. Like I say, unorthodox. 1,281 wins. All this from a utility player. If you go to the back of my closet in my family room where mm-hmm. baseball cards are in this huge box, mm-hmm. go to the Washington Senators pile, I have a baseball card from, I think it was 1957, Whitey Herzog, rookie outfielder, Washington Senators. Then he went to the Kansas City A's,
nice.
Finished up with the Baltimore Orioles. Really cool guy, but like I said, really unorthodox in terms of manager. Let's talk about Carl Erskine. The last of the boys of summer has left us. He was the last remaining member of the Brooklyn Dodgers boys of summer, the great teams of the 1950s. He passed away in Indiana at the age of 97. He was one of the closest allies in the early 1950s after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. He pitched for 12 years in Brooklyn. He pitched in five different World Series. He was an innings eater as a starter. He's got a World Series ring from the 1955 team. His record, back when baseball was real and there were all those great hitters, his record was 122-78.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, he was also known when he retired. He got into charity work. He had a son that was born with autism. He became an unbelievable backer of the Special Olympics. I interviewed him once about the aura of Jackie Robinson. He was so generous of his time. I might have spent 20 minutes with him on the Sports Talk Show just talking about the old Brooklyn Dodgers, the boys of summer, Robinson breaking the color barrier and all the things that Jackie went through and how his teammates reacted in the clubhouse. He was a tremendous human being. Third guy was the crafty lefty, Kenny Holtzman, a victim of Charlie O'Finley.
Yeah.
If you pitched in Oakland, he would include you in some sort of fire sale. Pitched for the Athletics, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Cubs. Three times World Series. Threw two no-hitters in his baseball career. His record was pretty good considering he always didn't pitch on great teams. 174-150. And Kenny Holtzman was involved in multiple trades that involved Reggie Jackson. Very good pitcher. Very, very good pitcher. Crafty lefty. He has passed away. So you got the White Rat. You got Oisk. And you got Kenny H.
Yeah, three amazing guys. I mean, for me, Whitey Herzog, I remember him as the manager of the Royals in the late 70s. And, you know, my A's kind of flamed out there by the mid-70s with Charlie O. And the Royals dominated the AL West. And it was like a grudge match every year in the AL Championship Series. And it was always the Yankees winning. But the Royals had, who did they have on that team? George Brett and Cookie Rojas, I think, played on that team. And
Dennis Leonard. I mean, they had great pitching.
Yeah.
And they had a couple of home run hitters along the way there. So Kansas City, for a chunk of time, was a really, really competitive team. That's before the salaries went crazy. And suddenly Kansas City's ownership said, we can't afford this.
Yeah. Well, I think Chris Chambliss was on both teams, the Yankees and the Royals. So that was a nice run. And I love those light blue Kansas City Royals uniforms. Erskine a little before my time, but boys of summer, I just think of Don Henley and the sport. But Ken Holtzman, I remember him as an A. And you think of all the great starters like Vita Blue and Catfish Hunter, and there's a bunch
Blue
of other
Moon Odom
and Blue Moon Odom, yeah. But you kind of forget a little bit about Holtzman. He was just always solid. He was always there. Long career. I looked at his stats up yesterday, and I was surprised how long his career was. He did a little work out of the bullpen near the end of his career, but man, that's a solid back of a baseball card for Ken Holtzman.
I'll tell you what, it was tough. We lost all three of those guys in about a 28-hour span. The bulletins came popping that they had passed on. Okay, we go from baseball, and we're going to go hoops here before we get to the first half.
Yeah, so Lakers, Clippers in the playoffs. The Lakers survived and advanced.
Healthy or hurt, those are the two key words going forward. Lakers have just roared into the playoffs. They've won 11 of their last 14 as they stormed to the finish line. Then when they needed road victories, they beat New Orleans twice. on their floor to get there. LeBron James has averaged 33 points a game down the stretch. Anthony Davis, like MVP dominance, points, rebounds, block shots. The intangibles, how red hot they have had in certain nights. One night it's Austin Reeves, the next night it's D'Angelo Russell, the third night it could be Rui Hachimura. They got everybody contributing. You know, in the history of the Lakers, Kobe Bryant, mm-hmm. Lakers, Magic Johnson, Lakers, all those great players, D'Angelo Russell just broke the single-season record for three-point shots made in a season on a franchise that Kobe Bryant ran.
Really?
Think about that.
Wow.
Yeah, D.A.R. has had himself quite a situation. Here's a question I have going forward. You know, now they're getting ready to start this series against Denver. Five games and maybe eight nights. We know that when LeBron and AD play downhill, when they are so physically dominant, they're not the same player the next game. When you play five games in eight nights, best of five series to start this thing, that could be a real problem for the Lakers. And they got to go to Denver. Denver's averaging 114 points per game. Denver's hitting 37% of their threes. Denver, 44 rebounds a night. They got the Joker, Nikola Jokic. They got Devontae Murray. They got Michael Porter. And they got two old dogs at guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Reggie Jackson. They got a lot of firepower in Denver. Denver's second best home record, NBA, 33-8. Denver at home, John, 118 points per game, shooting 52% from the floor at home.
Wow.
There. Lakers are only 19-21 on the road. Lakers are averaging 118 but giving up 117. Denver's got firepower. Denver's got experience. Denver's got depth. And Denver's got altitude on their side. Superman's going to need to show up every night for these road games in Denver. That's my concern. Lakers can do it one night, but because they play downhill and those guys play so hard, they can be able to do it in a five-game series. And John Riley says,
"Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, the way that game went. But I was just captivated by Zion Williamson in that game. I don't know exactly what it is, but the proportions of his body are a little different. I don't know if he's got a long torso or shorter legs or something, but that guy was fast.
He had 40. He had 40 before he got hurt. But the game before, when they needed to win it." To finish up in the standings, he was a no-show, got all freaked out, fell apart. I mean, I think he's finally learned what it is to be a pro, because up until this season, I thought he was a bum. He was chronically overweight. Mm-hmm. He was not a team player. His game was not polished. And the Lakers kicked their ass in the NBA midseason tournament. And from that point on, he threw a switch. He lost weight. He became a much better player. But yet, here we are, we see the 40-point night he had in the final game, the play-in game against the Lakers. They lost. The game before, he was hard. He wasn't putting out. There was no effort at all. So which is the real Zion Williamson? I think he's close to being a pro, but right now sometimes you look at him and say, that's not how pros act.
No, he's just a little bit of an odd duck, and he hurt himself. And when he came out of the game, that was a huge advantage for the Lakers.
And he can't play now in their next play-in game. They have one more chance to get into the playoffs with a play-in game, and he can't play. Hamstring.
Unbelievable. But how about D'Angelo Russell hitting that three right by the Pelican bench?
That's called dagger.
Yeah, and just giving the bench some of his business. That was fantastic.
Well, he's changed his approach, and he's changed my attitude about him, because I was tired of the act, the yapping, and going 3-for-13 and all that. He's had more really good games than he's had bad games. And of course, he's playing for his next contract. That's a big issue, too. So we got the Lakers. Do you think Superman can do this over a five-game series? Or do you think the Lakers are in trouble because it's Denver, it's altitude, it's Joker?
Yeah, that's a tough assignment. And the way those guys are so getting old. I mean, even last night in that 76er game, Joel Embiid was like, you know, hanging on. He was so tired and exhausted. So imagine what LeBron and AD are feeling. I've got my money on the Nuggets here. I don't see the Lakers going on another magical run like they had last year.
Okay, we got the Clippers. They're at the other end of the spectrum. They're hurting. And this is really bad because this team was built to get to the NBA Western Finals, and maybe this is the year. It has to happen. Kawhi Leonard has missed 8 games in a row. He's hardly practiced. He's been down 15 days. He's got tendonitis in the knee that's had the 2 surgeries. They don't know. He's got very limited practice time. He practiced Tuesday, practiced Wednesday. Very limited. They don't know how many minutes he can play. If he's not on the floor, it's not the same team. And now James Harden has got a foot soreness issue, and he's trying to play through it, but he's not as explosive as he was. I just don't know that Paul George can do this by himself. He's had a couple of magnificent games, but if the other two are not what the other two have to be, then George is going to get boxed into the seats. He's not going to be able to get his shots. They desperately need Russell Westbrook and Norman Powell off the bench to deliver big nights on the glass in terms of rebounding, defensively, and to score points. And they got to play Dallas. Dallas, 50-win season. Dallas, Luka Doncic, 33 per game. Kyrie Irving, 26-point games. Tim Hardaway and P.J. Washington, an additional 26 a night from those guys. Mavs are averaging 117 per night up and down the floor, 37% on threes, 48% shooting from the floor. They go get rebounds. Now, the Mavs don't play a hell of a lot of defense. That's why I thought this could be an unbelievable series. Mavs are giving up a buck 17 defensively. If the Clippers had everybody against everybody the Mavs had, this would be wild.
Mm-hmm.
But the Clippers, I just think, are in so much trouble if Kawhi can't play or can't be himself. And the fact he's missed 8 games in a row and has hardly practiced means this inflammation thing is still there. He goes on the floor and tries to play. Is he going to be able to play the next game or the third game or the fourth game? I think that, sadly, they've worked so hard to have such a good team. I think they're in big trouble.
Big trouble. Yeah. And it's just so disheartening. I mean, you wish this franchise would get a break. I remember it was either like in the late 80s or early 90s, Sports Illustrated did a in-depth research on the curse of the Clippers. Yeah. And they went back in time to when they were the Buffalo Braves and everything. And this was around the time, I think, Danny Manning was their draft pick and he blew out his knee. And then who's the other guy? He just retired. That was at Oklahoma State, and then remember Blake Griffin, that's right. And he ended up, you know, blowing out his knee right when he got drafted. I mean, we can make a list of unbelievable events in Clippers history that are the curse, and this is another one. Going to the playoffs, you got Harden, you got Paul George, and now Kawhi is hurt. So are we going to see him play, or is he definitely out?
They're hiding their whatever's going to happen to their vest. They're not telling the media anything. I just don't think if he's hardly practiced for 15 days because this thing keeps flaring, how's he going to pound up and down the floor? And he's going to play 8 or 10 minutes? That's not going to make a difference. So it's too bad because constructed on paper, you looked at roster at the beginning of the season, you thought, wow, this is going to be really good. One other basketball note, and we have to talk about it because it's a huge story.
Yeah, this gambling thing in the NBA, here we go again.
NBA has suspended Toronto Raptors young forward guard Jonte Porter. He's the brother of Michael Porter in Denver. He bet on games. He made a volume of money. He did this through DraftKings, a.k.a. NBA sponsor. How's that work out? He bet on himself in parlays for the amount of minutes to be played. Then, John, he rigged his appearances in the specific games that he bet on.
Unbelievable.
He opted out of one game under 4 minutes in, saying, I have an injury. He opted out of a second game that he bet on, saying, I don't feel good. Coaches didn't know. They pulled him. Now, through the investigation, through DraftKings, he bet $80,000 to win $1.1 million on 13 different NBA games he played in. He wasn't shaving points, but he was betting on, you would know, parlays. He was betting on Jonte Porter is going to play X number of minutes. Then he goes into the game and does not play that number of minutes, pulls himself out, collects the bets.
Mm.
On top of that, he provided inside info on injuries on his team and other teams to gamblers and reportedly got kickbacks from them when they bet on NBA games that he tipped them off to and won money. He bet $54,000. He made $76,000. He bet on his team to lose because he had all the inside information. This guy's a real degenerate, and this guy is gone from the NBA, and this is a big problem. How could a guy making the NBA minimum that I think is $750,000, he came out of the G League, making that kind of money with the potential of bigger contracts be this stupid to do this?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, obviously, they're surrounded by other influences that take him down to the dark side. But, you know, it just makes me wonder, like, is his personal finances are just in chaos and he was desperate because he needed money? It's just there's more here that's going on to understand the motive for all of this. But thank goodness they caught him and they ejected him from the league. And that's a good thing.
Here's the big issue, though. Their sponsor, DraftKings.
Oh,
FanDuel.
Yeah, here you go.
Here we go. NBA. Give me that advertising money.
Right.
Oh, their player is doing this.
Yeah. It's a mixed message.
You got that right. Hey, we get to halftime. Our podcast is brought to you by the North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We're all going to need help with our eyes somewhere down the road, whether it's just a vision test, new pair of glasses, whether it's contact lenses. But if you have more significant issues, glaucoma, cataracts, pink eye, some type of eye disorder, you need them. When that time comes, think about these people, because I've done business with them. North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. And our podcast also brought to you by Dixon Line Lumber and Home Centers. John, you've done business with them. I've done business with them. If people have projects, name some of the kind of projects that Dixie Line is going to stand up and say, we're here to help.
Oh, well, a bathroom remodel, a kitchen remodel. You want to put decking in your backyard, new doors, new windows. Or maybe you're a contractor and you just need to buy building supplies. They've got it all. It's a drive-through lumber yard. They make it really easy.
Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, your best friend when it comes to projects in the home, outside on the patio, up by the pool, or in the office. And we go to the second half of our podcast. A reminder, when we're done telling you about all the big stories in sports, we open it for you here in the States and everybody on our O Canada line. John, we call it Fans Forum. Tell people how they can get involved.
Yeah, you got a question for Lee, a comment on the world of sports. Take a look here. We got a bunch of guys piling in. Angel and Matt and Comet and Derek. And oh my God, there's a giant list. Ed's in the list. John, we're going to get you all involved in Fans Forum at the conclusion of Hacksaw's headline. So just keep piling in with more questions and comments in the live chat.
And a reminder, if you like sports, please check my website. I write on it every day of the week. It's there first thing every morning. And when you go to the website, we also invite you to join us. Hacksaw's Insiders Group is kind of a special club that we put together for things we're rolling out in 2024. Just fill in the orange box right on my homepage. You'll be able to get all of our special emails. And we want you to share. We want you to subscribe so you'll know every time you put something up on the YouTube channel. And because he has no friends and I'm bleeping brilliant, give us a thumbs up or give us a 5-star rating, because that really helps us a great deal on social media. We go to the second half and we're a week away. A week from today on the 25th, we start the NFL draft and we're rolling towards that. John, we got some hot headlines to talk about.
Okay, here we go. NFL draft. Now we're talking Rams and Chargers.
Yeah, let's start first of all with the Rams. For the first time in a long time, they have a number one draft pick. The Rams have brought in a ton of pass rushers led by Dallas Turner from Alabama, and they've just met with a guy that I think they might take, Leiatu Latu, pass rusher excellence, UCLA. They've met with him. Buffalo just met with him. If he's on the board, he might be the guy. Now, the Rams are scrambling because they've got to retrofit their defensive front because of the surprise retirement of Pro Bowl defensive tackle Aaron Donald. But the UCLA pass rusher might be the name. I think he'll be there when the Rams draft as they get to inside the top 20 picks. Busy 24 hours for the Chargers. They have just signed J.K. Dobbins of the Baltimore Ravens. He's a third down specialist. He's kind of the heir apparent to Austin Eckler. He will be the counterbalance to the big heavy-duty running back, Gus Edwards, that they signed. Robbins is just, he's had a flashy career when he's been able to stay healthy. But he had a, coming out of Ohio State, he had a catastrophic knee injury, got healthy, had a good season, ruptured his Achilles first game a year ago, missed all of last season. they think if they can keep him on the field, he'll be in the pass catching game what Eckler was coming out of the backfield. We all know that the Chargers are wafer thin at the wide receiver spot. They have brought in Marquez Valdes-Scantling, the ex-Packer and Kansas City Chief receiver. They may offer him a contract before the draft. He would be the veteran that's in the mix of all the young wide receivers they have. What are they doing beyond the first round of the pick? First of all, they brought in five offensive tackles to look at in the interview process in the last couple of weeks, led by the big offensive tackle from Notre Dame, Joe Alt, will be there at five. Fianu, the big Penn State offensive tackle. Latham, a developing offensive tackle from Alabama, and one big offensive tackle guard from Oregon State. They've also brought in Marvin Harrison from Ohio State, Malik Nabers from LSU, if they elect to go wide receiver at number five. Also, looking towards the second round, they just met yesterday with this massive defensive tackle who played for Jim Harbaugh.
Ah.
Chris Jenkins, University of Michigan. In fact, there's a feeling that if Harbaugh has his way, they may draft a number of Wolverines once they get beyond the first round. So that's where the Chargers are right now. And of course, there's also the option at five, if they don't get the best pick they want, they go to trade back and stockpile a couple of other picks, trade a little bit later. It's a little too early at this hour to say what they're going to do. If I were king and they were going to run the football, I'd draft one of those offensive tackles. But you sitting in the other street corner might be yelling, wide receiver, wide receiver. So, John, your thoughts on the Rams and your thoughts on the Bolts?
Well, first of all, it's incredible the Rams have gone so long without a first-round pick. But the Chargers, I mean, you just wonder how they're going to screw this thing up again. But they have the number five pick, and they're likely going to take a non-quarterback, assuming they stay at five. Who do you think is the best non-quarterback in this draft?
For their need.
For their need. So it's Alt from Notre Dame? Or?
That's my perception, yes.
Okay.
Because if you can't protect Justin Herbert and you can't run the football because you don't have enough linemen, then what's the use of getting Marvin Harrison or Nabers from LSU to throw to if you can't protect the quarterback and you can't run the bloody football?
Yeah.
I think you can go find speed receivers and you develop them in the second or third round. So if I were king, I'd take – but of course I'm conservative. I wear white shirts and striped ties and you wear whatever you wear. If I were king, I would take one of those tackles. Everybody tells me Alt is better than the kid at Penn State – and the kid at Oregon State, the kid from Alabama is an unbelievable skill guy, but he takes a lot of penalties. So that's where we are as of this hour. And again, Joe Ortiz is the one that's making the decision. Does he stay at five with Harbaugh and take what I think they should take? Or does he go from five to 10, let somebody else jump in, and then pick up the 10th pick in the first round and maybe something in the second round, which will give him more cachet? So that's where we are at this hour.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, since everyone's scrambling to get these quarterbacks, and there's like maybe as many as seven of them that look really good. So that might be the play for the Chargers, just to trade back. And if not 10, maybe 9 or 8, and maybe they can still get Alt.
We'll talk more about it as we go towards Monday. We're going to start zeroing in specifics on the draft. Let's talk from NFL football to college football.
Yeah, San Diego State. This is the spring game, right?
Yeah, I had fun with Sean Lewis. I went to their press conference this week, kind of a mini sneak preview of spring football going towards Saturday afternoon's red and black scrimmage. The big storyline, the two new quarterbacks are competing for the starting job. They're taking equal snaps. A.J. Duffy, who came out of Florida State, Danny O'Neill, the high school sensation from Indianapolis. It looks to me like it's a two-man quarterback race. They got transfer wide receivers everywhere. And Sean Lewis told me directly that the most impressive guy who's walked in there is a transfer from West Virginia who used to be at Kent State when Sean Lewis is there. His name is Deshaun Polk. He's big. He's 6'5". He's runs. He's got hands. Long strider. He looks like he's going to be a lead guy. They also got Lewis Brown, a transfer from Colorado State. UCLA transfer Jerry McClure is there. They got Mickey Shaw, returnee from last year's program. So there's a lot of guys in the mix, and they're going to use all these wide receivers. We'll get just a brief look at spring football. They're not opening up the playbook for you and me in the press box on Saturday. They're going to run some limited stuff just to entice it. Massive rebuild in the offensive line. Have only one O-lineman left at State. Everybody else transferred. Massive rebuild. Only one starter. Their nose tackle back on the defensive front. Could have as many as seven newcomers. I asked him to describe what they're running. And yeah, I've called it Aztec Air because they're going to throw the football a lot, and it'll be hurry up, no huddle, and all that. It's like a Heinz 57 offense. Run and shoot, a little veer and shoot, five wides, spread, sprint draws. They're going to run Heinz 57. Mm-hmm. I don't know what we're going to call it by the time we get to the start of the season. And I asked him about play calls. You know, coaches make play calls. I said, give me an example. I think I'm going to like Sean a lot. He doesn't always answer all my questions, but I kind of dominated the bleeping press conference because they let me. So I said, tell me what your play calls sound like. I said, do you use color code? Yeah. Do you use numbers? Yeah. Use a gimmick name? Yeah. He didn't want to give me anything beyond that. So I said, if you call the play, it said Orange 22, New Hampshire. That's how you get the play into your quarterback. He said, yeah, there it is. So expect a lot of weird stuff. And people standing behind him with these big placards.
Yeah.
We have a picture of Peanuts the dog and a picture of a boxing glove or whatever. Mm-hmm. That'll describe to the quarterback what they're calling. So Orange 22, New Hampshire. I don't know what the play is, but that's how it's fascinating guy to be around. He admitted to me the players went through culture shock the first 3 weeks of spring ball. They thought they had played at a fast pace. No huddle. They had no clue what they were walking into. So it'll be fun to see how quickly this is. And I know as we get through into the summer practices, we get to August, it'll be even faster than that. All you have to do is reflect back to what Colorado did. And I said, hey, Colorado Buffalo football last year at the beginning of the season, that was must-see TV.
Oh, big time.
With you and Shedeur Sanders and all the stuff. I couldn't believe you. Your kids could play at that tempo. He says, that's what we're going to try to be. Might be Heinz 57, might be different color codes and numbers and state names to describe those. He was fascinating to be around.
Well, just think, if this all works out, they're going to fill up Snapdragon Stadium. It's going to be terrific. You know what I did? I Googled Kent State offense and saw some of their play calls. And yeah, they have these, like, the quarterback will get the ball and then he'll make a decision, you know, based on how the defense is lined up, if he's going to give it to this running back, to the other running back, or if he's going to run. So they've got a lot of these little crazy gimmicks and things. And I think this is going to be very entertaining. But they're going to have to, like, I think I read in the article, they're going to have to do a lot more calisthenics because they've got to be in shape for the
linemen.
Speed.
I can't believe the wear and tear on the linemen, because you're right back at the line of scrimmage. Like you said, you watch a video, how many plays they run in a 1 minute segment? Three, four, which means your lineman has to hit that defensive end, play is over, get back, get set, wait for the signal call, come another snap, go forward. It's fascinating to see.
Right on. But he's a good egg, isn't he?
He's
just different. His personality.
He's cut from a different cloth, I'll tell you.
Yeah, but
and his press conference is as fast as his offense. It was a mile a minute.
It's a lot different than Brady Hoke.
I love Brady. And Brady had a different style and a different approach, and that's okay. We're all cut from a different cloth. But let's see going forward. He's got a lot of new things. Heinz 57 roster, too. He's got them coming for 24 transfers so far. And he's still got a few scholarships in his pocket. He wouldn't tell me how many. It was funny. He talks fast. I type fast. And I ask him another question. Go back and forth. I was pushing the tempo with questions as he was pushing the tempo back.
Love it.
With answers. Fascinating guy. So we'll see. I don't know if you're a college football fan. Jump on board. Come see the Aztecs. It's absolutely free. There's nothing in the bloody world that's free, John. 2:00, Snapdragon Stadium. You need an advance ticket. Get it through the Aztec website.
Really?
It's absolutely free. Walk in the door. So, all right, let's go from that. A couple other topics on the table before we get to Fans Forum.
Okay, we're going to talk a little Coyotes. There's been a lot of, you know, smack talk about this whole thing in social media.
It's called pushback.
Yeah.
Big story. We told you last week the NHL woke up one morning and said they can't get an arena built in Phoenix. We're done trying. They have announced the league has bought the Arizona Coyotes from Alex Marullo, who owns it. The league will sell it to Ryan Smith, who owns the Utah Jazz. They will go to Salt Lake City, play next year, the Delta Center. There'll be some renovations in the building. The response has been full of negatives. Brian Burke, very outspoken, former NHL executive, former NHL general manager, former player agent, former longtime defenseman, Philadelphia Flyers. I know him. I like him. He tells you what he thinks. He's a big old Irishman. Brian Burke went on network TV up in Canada, longtime executive, and he challenged Gary Bettman to answer the questions. Why would you leave a market of 6 million people, the Valley of the Sun, to go to a market of 1.3 million, Salt Lake City? why would you leave that big market, that television market, a market that kind of supported the team despite all the problems the franchise has had? Why'd you do that to go to here? Why didn't you consider Houston, which already has an arena? Houston might be the biggest growing city in America. Mm-hmm. Why do you consider Atlanta? Despite the failures, Atlanta's exploded. They got facilities. Why didn't you do what Hacksaw said last week? Call the people in Quebec City. He said, why would you do that from a TV viewership standpoint? So there, it's a money grab more than this anything else. He said, why not stay in Arizona? Well, Berkey, the reason is there's no bloody arena there. And to get an arena takes 3 years to 5 years. So that's why the NHL interceded. Indirectly, there was a lot of heat from the Players Association that you have put these players in an untenable situation in Arizona for years upon years, playing in this 5,000-seat stadium arena at Arizona State's absurd in modern-day hockey. You need to do something on behalf of the players who wear the Arizona color. So you lump all that in together. There's not going to be an arena there a week from Monday. That's a big issue. The league was tired of the troubles that Marullo was having, and they said, we'll buy it, we'll move it, we'll let you have the name and the colors, and you have a five-year window. If you can get the arena built, and Marullo says he will, you can then have an expansion franchise. But at the end of the day, why Salt Lake City, John, versus Houston that you know, versus Atlanta, versus the one I wanted, was Quebec City? And I'm sure the guys in the old Canada line will be joining us shortly on France Forum. Go ahead.
Why can't they just play where the Suns play? I mean, isn't the arena for basketball? They always convert to hockey.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the skyboxes that they want. The sight lines are kind of crappy. I mean, they played in like four different venues. Franchise has never been run correctly, dating back to when Wayne Gretzky became a part owner. And he tried really hard, and they never got an arena built. They kept going from one building to another. Then there was ownership problems, then there was bankruptcy, then there were missed rental payments, to which the Gila Reservation Arena said, we're not going to allow you to play in our building. You're behind in your rental payments forever and ever. We were 3 years they owed them, 3 years worth of money. Now it got paid, finally. We don't want to do business with you. So
yeah.
It's just been a bad arena situation.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, as far as where they should go, I mean, it's already NHL has already failed in Houston and Atlanta. They've never been in Salt Lake. I mean, I know there's been minor league teams there.
Yeah, but it's small Salt Lake.
Yeah, but it's not as small as you say it is. I think the whole market is around 3 million. So, which is kind of like San Diego. It's not big, but it's definitely not as big as Phoenix. To me, it just feels natural. You know, it's like in the mountain states, and you know, it just feels like a good fit.
I wish we had Doers in San Diego. Even though we have the aging sports arena, there's going to be a new building. I wish we had Doers that could have reached out to Gary Bettman and said, but I don't know if there was anybody here with that kind of money that wanted to buy the franchise for $1 billion.
Well, but Kroenke has said they're going to bring a team here. So there must be expansion on NHL's minds, right?
Has to be.
Yeah.
So maybe Kroenke's ideology is we got to build a new sports arena. Then we'll be a player when expansion comes.
Yeah, I think you have to go in that order.
Okay, let's go from that. That's the latest in hockey. Kind of a unique story coming off the Masters at Augusta.
Yeah, McIlroy and Mickelson, they got something to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation off the course. First of all, the Masters drew 3.4 million viewers. Best for Augusta since 2018.
Really?
It stopped the bleeding. Listen to these numbers, John. This year, we have talked about LIV and all the players that went abroad, and now they're off the radar. We talked about all the no-names that are playing on the PGA Tour. TV viewership, Phoenix Open, which is a marquee event, down 35%. The Bay Hill Classic, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, down 30%. The TPC, which is a Grand Slam event, viewership down 15%. Where do they owe golf? They're not watching golf. LIV Doral Open 2 weeks ago with all the marquee names playing at the Trump Resort. Only 243,000 viewers for an LIV tournament with all the marquee names in Miami.
Amazing.
So golf's viewers have disappeared. Why? I think the fans are tired of the narrative of money. I think we have nondescript winners on the PGA Tour with the exception of Scottie Scheffler, who's kind of dominated. And the LIV is not on anybody's radar. I don't think no one likes the false excitement of, quote, team play. The TV ratings have evaporated on the Pro Tour. And the merger talks, well, they're still out there. Now, in terms of Rory and Phil, Rory McIlroy denied a report in the Irish Independent, which is the big newspaper in that country, that he was negotiating an $850 million deal to jump to LIV. He didn't answer the question, did LIV make you the offer? He said, I was not negotiating. I'm going to stay on the PGA Tour forever. Phil Mickelson, who is at the bottom of the barrel right now in terms of trying to be competitive on LIV, he confirmed this week at the Masters they're considering dumping the 54-hole format to go to a 72-hole format next year.
Hey.
The reason, they're not anybody in the LIV does not qualify for world golf ranking points, mm-hmm. which prevents them from getting into all the other Grand Slams.
Yeah.
But they're not going to give up the, quote, concept of team play rather than go back and just play medal play the way they normally do here in the States. So they're making one concession. I don't know if that's going to convince the world golf ranking people to start giving them points because it's still team play and they don't recognize team play as a viable way to play the game. And there's still enormous pushback on the PGA about we can't let these guys back in for free. They need to pay a penalty because they violated their tour card to go there. And enormous pushback. We don't want team play as part of our format. So that's a big story in golf. John, I threw a lot of junk at you. Go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of junk there. I think there's another factor here because when golf was at its pinnacle with Tiger and Phil, you know, those superstars had personality and they kind of had their own thing, you know, where Scottie Scheffler is a hell of a golfer, but, you know, he's just like another guy, you know,
he's
just
another good guy,
a good guy, no question. But, you know, all the things that Tiger did moving the sport forward. I mean, there's a long list of accolades that he brought to the table. You don't see as many characters. There's no more John Daly's or, you know, guys that are fun to watch or interesting to watch to give you a little bit more to make it must-see TV.
Yeah, there's no Arnie and Jack anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no Golden Bear. There's no Arnie's Army. Obviously, Tiger and Phil reinvented fan support with who they were and their style, and it's kind of disappeared again. John Daly should be playing in LIV for 50 cents. You know, John Daly with the absurd outfits.
Yeah.
You know, I interviewed him a couple times and I found him weird.
Yeah.
Me calling somebody weird. But, you know, the only thing John cared about were his sticks, his smokes, and his suds. He'd fit right in on LIV, smoking, drinking on the course, hitting shots into the water, running up and down in shorts. That's what LIV is. But so, yeah, it is a different era right now. They have to solve this. This civil war has to end because it's killing golf. Nobody's watching the PGA here.
Mm-hmm.
And LIV is playing in all these different time zones in French Equatorial Africa and all these other countries. Nobody's paying attention to them. What a disaster that this thing is created.
Why does LIV cling to this team model? You know, is this like popular in Europe?
Or do they think?
Or do you think this is the new innovation that's going to make golf better?
Yeah, Greg Norman wanted something different. What he's got is a loser.
Yeah, I mean, golf is an individual sport. You know, we look at for individual people. We don't really think of teams. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I concur with you. Final topic on the table because Fans Forum is just around the corner. We're running a little bit long and loud today, but that's okay.
Long and loud. All right, here we go. King Charles and Pat McAfee.
Yeah, remember the TV show they just started? King Charles?
Yeah.
Charles Barkley? Gail King?
Mm-hmm.
They just canceled it.
They did?
It's going to be devastating to you. I mean, what are you going to watch at 10 o'clock in the morning?
I've watched that a few times. It's kind of awkward, but it's okay.
It was awkward. It was a ratings zero. It just got canceled 3 months in. They've dropped Gail King, Charles Barkley's talk show. I watched it. Barkley is everywhere, okay? Congrats to him for marketing himself in his post-playing career. He's got opinions on everything. I don't need Barkley's opinions on society, on politics, on the presidential race. Hell, sometimes I don't want his opinions on what's gone on in the NBA and the NCAA. He's kind of oversaturated me with all things Sir Charles. That being said, he's done really well, but he's on every TV network and he's on every other commercial I see. And enough is enough. They canceled it. Pat McAfee. You know, he went from the podcast world to big money at ESPN, and his ideology is, I can say anything I want, even if it's slanderous against anybody. So, you know, Pat McAfee's killing Stephen A. Smith on ESPN, and he killed the president, Norby Williamson, who just retired. Anyhow, he's doing something wrapped around the draft next Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And who's he got working with him? Bill Belichick.
Ooh, interesting.
Belichick is going to be the in-studio coordinator. So you got loudmouth McAfee, who wears me out, versus Mr. Mumbles, who says nothing, Belichick. So maybe we'll get a sneak preview, if anybody watches this, of what if Belichick's actually going to wind up on NFL Network's doing analyst work and what it might sound like, because I don't think it would sound real good.
Interesting. Pat McAfee, I kind of like him. He's on some of those college game day broadcasts. I've seen him there. He does a good job. You know, I don't listen to his podcast. I don't watch him too much on ESPN. But, again, Belichick's not coaching anywhere, so he's got an open weekend. I want to go back to the Gail King, Charles Barkley bit. When they first announced that, I thought it was brilliant. I mean, I really did, because Gail King is so personable and likable. She does that morning show on CBS, Friends with Oprah. And, everyone loves Charles, right? Everyone wants Charles.
Well, not everyone.
Well, he's blown up. I mean, he's been beyond the scope of basketball now for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And this seemed like another level up. And when you're dealing with Barkley and he throws you a one-off comment on culture or society or politics, so you think, oh, that's clever, that's funny. But when he's doing it for the whole show, it's like he quickly maxes out on his capacity of what he understands. I mean, you get him in front of basketball, he can talk forever because that's who he is, you know? So it was an awkward show, but I remember they had Shaq on there as a guest. They've had other guests on. It was interesting, but it never really was as good as I had hoped.
Too much wise-ass stuff.
Yeah.
And it just, maybe it's just me. Maybe out there you like that stuff. There's just too much of it. I don't need his opinions on shirts and ties and parking lot problems and politics and what's gone on with the king in England and why. And I guess they missed their mark. I like Gail King. I think she's got great, great credibility, but not in that venue, not with him.
Yeah. It was just awkward. But this always happen that you get guys or women, you know, that are specialists in a category and they think they're going to blow up and cross over to these new categories. And people like, you know, Taylor Swift can pull that off, but very few can. Once you get outside of your zone, man, you expose a lot of weaknesses.
So you regret bringing me in to do this podcast now? All right. Hey, it's time for Fans Forum. Just a quick reminder, our podcast is brought to you by Dixonland Lumber and Home Center Stores, 9 locations in San Diego to serve you, and by North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. Fans Forum chat box is open. John Riley, these are your best friends. You pick the questions because there's a ton of them out there.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Let's go to John first. He says, Stanley Cup playoffs time. Hoping the president's trophy curse afflicts the Rangers. Let's go Caps.
Rangers, Boston Bruins, Dallas Stars. Pretty good group of teams stateside. Oh, Canada. Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, this is going to be spectacular NHL playoffs because we've got four firepower teams north of the border. You got at least four here. Might be some upsets along the way. Bring on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Toughest trophy to win because all those series, there's no gimmicks or gadgets or one-game play-ins or best of three crapola. Best of seven, pal. I'll see you and see who's standing by the time we get to the end of June because that's how long these playoffs go.
Wow. This is a great time of year, isn't it? It's fantastic. Oh, by the way, I looked up. You know, we were wondering why the Rangers were the Rangers in New York. I guess the owner of the team then also owned the Madison Square Garden, and his nickname was Tex because he was from Texas. So they called it Texas Rangers. And that's how that name came to the team in New York City.
Thank God for the internet. And John Riley's got all the spare time in his hands. Exactly. Next question. Thanks, John.
All right. Let's go to Graham. He says, hey, the umpire in the booth was a real snoozer.
I thought it was fun, but you can't do that on a game-in, game-out basis. But I'll give credit to MLB, which now operates the Padre TV thing. They need to create more creative content. You know, whether it's just servicing me, the fanatic, about the out-of-town scoreboard, you've got people there that could do the insertions in the third inning, the sixth inning, maybe in the eighth inning. You've got all those openings with the advertisers. Instead of running Padre promo, do some insertions. You've got a great broadcaster in Bob Scanlon who tells really good stories. Use him more. I feel bad for Mike Pomerantz because they started to do something where they bring him in for a little round table in the third inning, and it just seemed forced. It didn't seem natural at all. You know, maybe instead of having him in the booth, let him be down on the field, and in the third inning, do a Q&A back and forth between Donnie O and Mudd and Pomerantz on some hot topics on the table. Because when they've done it with him in the booth, it just sounds like it's staged, and it shouldn't be that way. So if I were King, I'd add some more creative content there. The umpire in the booth thing was kind of cool. I think it maybe not for nine innings, but, you know, maybe for three innings. I think bring a retired general manager in. Just let him sit in a chair and talk stories about how this works, how do you make that trade, et cetera, et cetera. Not that you're making reference to what AJ did. I just think there needs to be in the Padre broadcast more creative content. Attention, Eric Grubner, my memo will be in your email box tonight. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, you know, they sometimes they'll bring in, you know, if not Grubner, it'll be AJ Preller or the team president. And they'll, you know, granted, it's a PR thing where they're trying to sell their tchotchkes for the promos, for the beanie hats and everything else. But it's nice to have an executive there and provide a different opinion. And they've had other people come in, but, you know, there is that classic two-man booth thing that a lot of people don't want to see that disrupted. You know, they want because baseball has so many traditionalists.
They want Donnie O and Julia Jake.
Yeah.
That's what they want. Or CeeLo and Mark Grant. I understand that. I'd like to see more content added to what those guys bring.
Yeah, I just wish they didn't cancel the pre and post game show. And it would, I think it'd be good if you had Pomerantz like out in the stands too, talking to fans. I mean, there's a lot of other things that can be done for sure.
Next question.
Moving on. All right, here's from Winnipeg Sports Talk. Hey, what's up, Hacksaw?
I'm doing well. Hope you're doing well. You're unbearable. You guys can't wait for the bleeping playoffs. 50 wins. I'll tell you what, that's impressive considering what Winnipeg's gone through. They've shredded a lot of guys on their roster. Tyler Toffoli's become a really quality player up in Winnipeg. All the guys that Chevalier, the general manager, has brought in, that's a pretty good hockey team. I think they play Vancouver tonight. It's their final regular season game and then on to the postseason. But it's been a year of surprises in Canada. I mean, we always expected the Maple Leafs and the Oilers. I'm not so sure we expected Winnipeg to win 50. And I surely did not expect Vancouver, and they made a lot of changes, to be the best in the West in terms of points. When you add the Canadian teams to the NHL playoffs, it's really special. I wish hockey fan, you included, could have access to the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast and compare it to the style that we get here. And what we see here stateside with TBS, et cetera, it's pretty cool. But Hockey Night in Canada is just a different venue.
Yeah, I've never sampled that. That sounds like it'd be a real fun thing to do because it's a proven formula.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of people are asking questions here about hockey, Lee. I mean, here's one from Callan. He says, Hacksaw, who you got winning Lord Stanley this season?
It's wide open. You got so many really good teams. I mean, Toronto's got the firepower of the 69 goals from Austin Matthews, and they got Mitch Marner. Winnipeg's got firepower. Vancouver just wears you out. The key in Vancouver, can they get good, solid goaltending now that Thatcher Demko, the San Diego native, Scripps Ranch, is back in goal? That becomes a big question. Dallas has got hired guns. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, you look at some of these other teams that are really dangerous. The Rangers, I don't think the Rangers are getting anywhere near enough coast-to-coast recognition. They got a lot of guys who can score. That's a pretty good hockey team. And Boston's Boston, and they've got good talent, too. To me, it's wide open. My heart tells me Toronto has enough to win it. But they have to do it. They haven't won the Stanley Cup since 1967. Vancouver's so rugged. I just don't know if they can survive all these best-of-seven series because I think they wear themselves out. No game for them is easy. They just bang on you. But I would say those are my two going forward, but anybody could win this thing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching. I mean, granted, I didn't grow up as a hockey fan here, being a native Californian. But the more I watch, the more I like. And, you know, I still want to see how this whole thing plays out because I know it's spectacular every spring.
Hacksaw mini poll. Molson's Canadian or Labatt's? Which beer do you like?
Oh, those are the only two choices up there? No, Molson's not bad. Yeah, there you go.
I'll bring the Molson's. You bring the sub sandwiches.
Okay.
Next question.
Moving on. All right, let's go to Angel. And he says, hey, shame that Zion not going to play this past season was his coming out party.
Well, it's too bad. I mean, he has played the second half of the season like a dominant guy. And he's not big. I mean, he's 6'9", maybe, but he's explosive. He's a long strider. He's got a wide variety of moves going to the net. He made some shots. He said, how did he get that shot off as he blew by guys? But you know what? He's still an in-and-out performer. for that 40-point game, as great as it was to see Williamson do that, we had the game before where he had 7, and he played like he didn't care. He played like he got bullied by LeBron. It was just really weird. But with him and Brandon Ingram and their guards, they got guards that come off the bench that just wear you out because they lean on you and they hit 3-point shots and they run the floor and they take the ball away. That's a pretty well-constructed team. But now it's too bad that he tweaks his – I thought it was his groin. They said he's got a minor hamstring injury, but he's not going to play in the last of the play-in games that they got to play against Sacramento. And that's too bad because I don't think they can win without him. But he's vibrant, and he finally grew up from about December on where – I thought this guy's going to be a bomb. This guy's a bust. It's 2.5 years of everybody expecting potential and has never shown. Then all of a sudden it showed, and he showed us how really good he could be. So hopefully he's grown up on the job.
Yeah, grown up on the job. I mean, that was another thing I was noticing when I was watching the Laker game, against the Raptors. And sometimes I lose sight of it because to me, it's basketball. It's fun. It's exciting. And I watch the college and I watch the pros. But pro basketball is a much more mature version of the game. And yeah, these players, they are pros. And you can tell by the way they conduct their business on the court. It seems like Zion still has that college mentality.
Yeah, it came easy for him there. Unless he puts the nose to the grindstone, he's not going to have a great career. And he's already had a siege of injuries. He's had multiple foot problems, and now he's finally gotten beyond that. And then he got killed in the November NBA Cup games by the Lakers. And maybe the light bulb's gone on in terms of conditioning, responsibility, game planning, and all those things. He's surely different now than he was for 2.5 years. But then again, we have these crap outings when they needed it the most. He didn't show till he got 40, and then he got hurt.
Ugh. What a miserable existence. Yep. All right, let's go on. Let's go to Gary. He says, hey, most amazing game by Michael King. He showed so much poise after that base hit. I would have been stomping up and down, really fell for him. He'd done good. And the real story with your eye is that you finally met a Raider fan in the parking lot, and I'd hate to see what the Raider fan looks like. Feel better soon.
I ran into a doorknob. No, that's not true. I had eye surgery yesterday. I want a medal that I am playing hurt. I want that notation. And John and I have laughed and joked because we came in here during the COVID time and we had a COVID outbreak in our studio. We wore masks and we debated, how do we do this? Should we do this? Are we exposing ourselves? And we came in and we did the show wearing COVID masks for two straight weeks. So we've been dedicated, but hey, you got to play hurt sometimes. And yeah, my name's on the injured list. But dude is here doing his thing for you people back there, and I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, I mean, you've been through hell, you know. And
I also got a back problem, too, and I've been going through therapy. Nobody knows that I have a major back issue, too, but we have not missed a show.
No, yeah, you play hurt. I mean, for sure, you won't go on the injury list. You're like Manny Machado. Okay, hey, let's go here.
I do want to say about Michael King.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's Bulldog in that guy. And the same with Dylan Cease. And, you know, King walks a lot of guys. He does throw a lot of pitches. But you saw the best of Michael King. He was zeroed in against Milwaukee in terms of ball movement, location. He was spectacular. Now, this is the same guy that walked 7 guys in a game early in the season. The same guy gave up 4 home runs the week prior. But there's dog in him, and there's dog in Dylan Cease, and there's dog in Joe Musgrove if we can get him back. This rotation looks pretty good to me if they can keep him all healthy.
You remember we used to talk about how the Padres need to play with a winning edge. Yeah. And that's when we got Tommy Pham. We were all excited that he was going to give it. These guys are doing it.
The pitchers are.
Yeah. And then even guys like Jackson Merrill are doing it. So I love that vibe. I think that's terrific. But yeah, Michael King, that changeup, man, it was landing in the bottom right corner, you know, for left-handed hitters, down and away, hitting strikes. I mean, it was fantastic.
Young guy threw 109. That's a little too much for me as a starting pitcher. But I mean, he was dominant. He was really rolling. It's too bad he lost the no-hitter, but it's too bad they lost the game. That's the bigger issue. But if they can keep him healthy, he and Cease, boy, you know in a 4-game series you're going to face some real heat.
And that's your number 4 starter. Hey, that's not bad. Okay, let's move on here. And let's go here to Chris. He says, Saw, I've got my hot dog and my Labatt's Blue, and I want to talk playoff puck with you. Can the Kings make a run this year with the Electric Kids on the blue line and the Journeyman Netminders? React to me, damn it.
Oh, Canada. The Kings have all this firepower. You never know from game to game who's going to show up. I think you can trust Kempe, there's no doubt you trust Kopitar, proven commodities. You just don't know what you're going to get from Fiala. You just never know when Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to show up and score goals. That brings a big issue. I will tell you that Drew Doughty just plays monster number of minutes, and I do think they're young defensemen. Mikey Anderson, those guys, they're pretty good. I think goaltending is a little suspect. You know, maybe that's got to be addressed in the offseason. I know they've got massive salary cap issues there in L.A. because they're paying the forwards an enormous amount of money. I don't know how deep they're going to go, but on paper, I look at them and said, man, they should score a lot of goals, but they don't do it on a consistent basis. And I hate to think that they might be one and done because Rob Blake has worked really hard to put a pretty competitive team. The Byfield kid, the high number one pick, the kid that came here as an 18-year-old and was overwhelmed. He had a good first two-thirds of the season. He's kind of tailed off. He's not scoring goals right now. So I think you need to keep that in mind that maybe he's kind of hit the proverbial wall because he takes a lot of face-offs. He does take a lot of shifts.
You know, I appreciate Chris in this post because he's talking the hacksaw smack talk right here. He's got the shtick going. You must get that a lot when you run into people on the street.
Oh, people yell at me all that. So 30 seconds, private conversation.
Okay.
So I had eye surgery yesterday, and I'm waiting to undergo this procedure on my left eye. I had three different doctors who knew I was in the building, came by to say hi. And here I am with IVs in, getting ready to be rolled into the surgical procedure. And these doctors are talking to me about the Padres or the NFL draft. It was really funny. And those guys at the new hospital in Escondido are just gems. What a great facility that is. So I had a lot of fun before they put me under to do this eye procedure. So, yeah. I do get a lot of smack talk, and people yell at me all the time, touchdown San Diego, or show me your lightning bolt, or hey, Raider fan, out of jail on bail, call now.
I want to talk sports with you.
Damn it.
All right, 4RXLA says, the Dodgers are looking like the Padres of last season. They sure could use Trevor Bauer right now. Look for Roberts to get fired before the All-Star game if the Dodgers are not in first place.
Well, they're not playing real well right now. John and I were talking about this in the middle of the week. The bottom third, actually the bottom four guys in the Dodger lineup are hitting 194. That's pretty poor. The bullpen, the collective group, has an ERA of 4.94 right now. Now they're about to get Walker Buehler back, but they just lost Bobby Miller, who's got shoulder inflammation because his arm was not responding between starts. So they're a little bit dinged up right now, but there's a hell of a lot of baseball to be played. And I'll tell you, the top five guys in the batting order are crushing the baseball. You look at the stats. Mookie Betts was 5-for-5 the other night. I think he's hitting .363. Showtime, he's hitting like .334. Freeman has cooled a little bit. Muncy is hitting. Will Smith is dangerous. So if they don't have any catastrophic injuries to their starters, they're going to be okay because they're going to get some guys back here pretty quickly. Buehler is about to return maybe within the next 10 days.
Buehler is a hell of a pitcher.
Oh,
yeah. And I just, the way he throws and just his mechanics are just incredible. That late life on the fastball from Buehler, it must be the spin rate. Dave Roberts, there's always been people, you know, calling for him to get his head cut off. Yeah. But he seems like he's well-liked and respected by the Dodgers organization.
They just need some players to step up. I mean, I'm just kind of shocked at how poor some of their guys at the bottom of the batting order are producing right now. You know, from Kiki Hernandez down to some of the other guys but they've hit before. I think they're going to hit back. They're going to get Jason Hayward back as a left-handed DH and left-handed pinch hitter or rotation guy in the outfield. And I think Outman is going to start hitting again because he had a good year. I don't know what's gone down with Gavin Lux because he had a tremendous spring hitting prior to getting hurt a year ago. His bat is what got him to the majors. Last I checked, I think he was hitting 193. So there's some guys that have to produce yet, but we got time.
Well, I think Jason Hayward says he's good defensively. I don't think he's much of an offensive threat, though, is he?
He can hit. He has hit in the past. He's got some pop. If he hits .250 and gives me 15 to 20 home runs and he plays strong in the outfield, he always does. Yeah, he's a rotation guy. We're not living and dying by him.
Yeah, well, I'll take that. Okay, let's move on here to Matt. And he says, who is your favorite CFL team? There's only one correct answer.
Oh, geez, that could be hard. That thing changes every year. I've never seen a league where the top players change teams all the time. Top quarterbacks leave. I mean, the Argonauts have won a lot of games in the last recent years, and their quarterbacks have left and gone other places. You know, the BC Lions had a good run for a couple of years, and they're not the same. Edmonton, which used to be strong, Edmonton, Eskimos hyphen Elks now, that's the worst thing I'd ever seen in football last year. They lost 13 home games in a row over a two-year period. How can you get that bad? Saskatchewan's picked itself up off the floor. Winnipeg Blue Bombers are really good, and they've had good success renting quarterbacks. And they got a quarterback from the University of Cincinnati who's come, I think may have come from the Hamilton Ticats. So I would say Winnipeg remains good. I don't know what to make of the Montreal Alouettes. I'm talking about things that you don't pay attention to. I understand that. It's a cool league. It's a different league. I've never seen teams where the quarterbacks change and go to different teams almost on an every year basis. I am more surprised that backup quarterbacks in the NFL who have no chance of playing, guys third string, don't go to Canada because they can play. They can make a significant amount of money and be a star up there and maybe find like living in Canada kind of cool rather than being on the waiver wire and being in somebody's camp and getting cut. And there's so much politics at the back end of everybody's NFL roster. I'm just shocked agents don't deliver. I mean, you need quarterbacks. Why agents don't deliver quarterbacks to the Canadian League. Now, that being said, you're not making mega money. You might be making $500,000 if you were the marquee guy in the CFL. And the game is radically different. Guys have gone up there I thought would do well and didn't because of the 12 men and everybody's in motion. You only got three downs. The field looks so different because it's so much wider and it's 110 yards. It's just a very different game. Some guys can make the connection and do it, and other guys are just overwhelmed by what they see at the line of scrimmage. It's a very different game. I like it. I follow it. It's on TV down here in the early spring into the summer. I watch it, but us football junkies do that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, if let's say you're a third string quarterback in the NFL, if you go to the CFL, I mean, you know, kudos to the CFL, but you're not coming back to the NFL. I mean, they're going to probably, well, it'd be unlikely because they'll say, oh, he didn't cut it in the NFL. That's why he's here. You know, so I think there's just so much prestige with being an NFL player in America. It's hard to walk away from that.
But see, that I think that's a bit of a misconception. You go up there and you polish your game. Doug Flutie did, Toronto Argonauts. Warren Moon did way back in the day, and he was, I think he was really the first cross-border guy that came back and became a superstar. But you go up there, you get snaps, and if you can play in that game up there, you can play down here, even though this is a much faster game, it's a more confined game. But it takes a different type of quarterback to want to be able to survive up in Canada because it's such a radically different game. And the weather is so rugged from October into November into the Grey Cup finals. Okay, that's my CFL story. You guys over there, you owe me a Molson's Canadian. Next question, John.
Next question, let's go to Richard. And he says, is the Padres' early success sustainable and the Dodgers' current skid last?
Good questions on both ends. I will throw this out to the guy out in left field. Are the Padres doing this because they've come together as a team, or are they doing this because they went against some really bad pitching staffs? Although I wouldn't call the Dodgers a bad pitching staff, but John, the Padres are sitting there one game over 500. Is it because they played some bad people of no arms? Is that a yes or a no?
I'm not sure.
We're not going to take the 11 wins away that the Padres have right now.
Yeah.
But that being said, have they played really good people?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they played the Dodgers. I mean, yeah, they played the Giants, which are decent. But it's not like we played Atlanta or Philadelphia or a lot of other teams. But you gotta just take it, man. You know, these are all major league clubs with major league ball players. You just gotta just win what's on the schedule. I think what they're doing is sustainable. Where they are, they're like in second place or over 500. They're not gonna light the world on fire, but I think they're gonna be better than last year. And they're kind of in that jockeying position. The Dodgers, you would think, are they gonna turn it on again? But then, you know, these teams, we know, the Padre fans, you spend a ton of money, it disrupts the chemistry. And then what do you have at the bottom of the order? You got like guys that are just, you know, barely hitting above the Mendoza line if they're lucky. That's not going to sustain you. So the Dodgers might be in trouble.
Small sample size. Let's not go crazy.
There you go.
Let's not order World Series rings, and then let's not give up on the season. Let's just kind of enjoy it going forward. John, go ahead. Couple more here.
Okay, couple more. Let's go to Cal, and he says, John, America West was never built by the Suns to accommodate hockey when it opened up. As Hacksaw would say, Google America West Arena Coyotes and see how atrocious it was.
Well, the Winnipeg Jets moved to Phoenix, and I thought it was great because I lived in Phoenix. I worked there. I knew the marketplace was exploding. It's now $3.5 million. It's huge. But it's also oversaturated. You've got the NFL troubled Cardinals. You got the Diamondbacks. Last I checked, they were in the World Series last year. You add into that, you got Arizona State Sun Devil football, which is big time in that marketplace. And you got the Diamondbacks and the Suns and Sun Devils, and all of a sudden you got hockey. And then that's a big issue. And they've had bad arenas ever since they moved the franchise there. They moved it on the potential of the growth of the marketplace. We're going to be in the Sun Belt in the Southwest as we're growing the sport. That was a good idea. But ownership had money problems, and everybody who had hopes, starting with when Gretzky went in there as a co-financer, had hopes we'd get something built. Nothing ever got built. And the different places they wound up were not really built for hockey. They were built for a wide variety of other things, and then ownership fell behind in their rental payments, and the league had to keep coming in to put out fires. The league took over the team out of bankruptcy. The league found another owner. That owner didn't work. They found Marullo, who they believe is dedicated to do it right. But like I said, we're not building a new arena in Scottsdale a week from Monday. That sucker takes 3 to 5 years.
You know, at first I thought when I saw this comment from Callan, it was, well, how in the hell could it be any different? The sight lines are similar. The rink and the court for basketball are similar. It should fit. But really, then I thought more deeply about it. And I would imagine that these dual purpose stadiums probably have a lot of infrastructure underneath, like the foundation, mm-hmm. to bring the water in so they can freeze the ice again. I mean, I imagine that's a tremendous transformation when they flip those arenas.
Some of these arenas do have the ice making equipment there. Some places you have to install it. But, you know, the sight lines, right? I was told the basketball arenas that they've played in, the sight lines have been brutal. It's just,
really?
Yeah, it's just not NHL conducive. And, you know, they're going to the Delta Center. Part of the agreement Ryan Smith made, the owner of the Utah Jazz, who's bringing the Coyotes in, is there will be some specific renovations as it relates to seating, I guess, for the hockey rink. It's too bad. And, I mean, Houston's got unbelievable population base. Houston's got arenas. Atlanta's got arenas, and they've exploded population base. And I might be in the minority. I still think Quebec City should have a franchise because it's O Canada, and that's their sport. But at this point, the league, and maybe that's an economic issue, the difference between the American dollar and the Canadian dollar. I'd still like to see a franchise go back to the Colisée, or they call it now, I think it's called the Olympic Arena, the brand new one that they built. That's where we are. Let's do one more here.
One more. Okay, let's go to Emmanuel. And he says, it seems a lot of sports leagues want to expand. MLB, MLS, WNBA, and NHL. Is there enough money to support these new teams when established cities aren't even paying tax money to keep their existing teams?
Well, a lot of this is driven by, hey, we can get a TV contract, and hey, we'll expand, and we'll find another rich man that wants to pour a ton of money and put it on the table to be divvied up all the other owners, and then he'll get a TV contract. Somewhere along the way, John, I think there has to be a saturation point where suddenly this blows up. I think college athletics, college football is headed down a back alley. And I think there are going to be problems. When these TV contracts come up and the networks realize they poured all this money to each of these conferences and they got a bunch of bad schools that are all getting equal payday, you're going to see in the next set of TV contracts, everything radically change. I'm going to pay the top teams in the Big Ten to come join a super football conference. And the rest of the conference, you'll just have to go out on your own and divvy up your own TV contract for basketball or college baseball or the Olympic sports. I think 5 years from now, I think we're going to have a radical change when these TV contracts come up for renewal, because the networks will say, I am not paying Rutgers $50 million a year to finish in last place. Or
Rutgers.
You could go name any team in any conference has got a bottom dweller. And so I think this whole thing's going to change.
I agree with you. I think, yeah, college sports is definitely going through a huge transformation. But is there any league in any sport that you think has too many teams? I don't think so.
No, but how many of them are good? How many of them are competitive because the owners are willing to spend the money to put a good product on the field? I think that becomes an issue. Also is an issue is the power of the Players Association. Every time a collective bargaining agreement comes up, you'll know two things. The price tag on marquee players is going to go up, and then there'll be trickle-down effect. Everybody else's dollar value goes up. Now, as long as the TV contracts are coming in, the gross revenue in the pot grows, which means there's more money for the players. But if we have an issue where the TV money starts to go down, now those unions and those owners are going to have a real problem because the amount of money that was in the pot to pay the megastars and all the other guys is going to be a lot less than it was before if the TV contracts change. There has to be, as I said, saturation point where there's too much.
Well, I think the brilliance of what they do with soccer in England is the relegation system. And I like that. I mean, imagine if we brought that to America. That could fit in a lot of different sports.
You think if the Padres had a bad season, it'd be okay to be in the Pacific Coast League? I don't think so.
Well, you don't want to be there, but that would be good motivation to keep those teams, you know, relevant.
Yeah. It'll be interesting going forward. I will say this, you know, obviously the NFL prints money in the hallways.
Yes.
The NFL is a raging business success. Baseball's attendance numbers have been phenomenal. Their TV numbers have grown. The NBA and the NHL just came through, both of them, record-setting seasons for attendance. So the top four sports that we know of are doing really, really well. Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed everything we've tried to present today. Ton of information. We thank you for being part of Fans Forum. A reminder, our podcasts are here Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific. Next week, we're going to zero in more on the National Football League Draft. Our podcasts are brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Center Stores. 9 locations to serve you in San Diego. You got projects. They are your best friends. And by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. Do I get bonus points for doing this with a black eye after eye surgery? Damn right I do. John, have yourself a great sports weekend. We'll start working on the draft on Monday. It's going to be a fun time on our podcast.
Looking forward to the draft, Lee.
Have yourself a great sports weekend. Thanks for joining us on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.